Welcome to Tardi Macha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we will be studying Yecheskel, Perek Mem Gimel, Chapter 43. Our perek begins with what seems like the last act of our little friend, Mr. Measure, the copper man, at least for now. Yecheskel is led by this figure, Vayolicheni, the man led me, Yecheskel says, El Hashar, to the east-facing gate. This is the gate where they first met, Yecheskel and this copper-looking figure, back in Perek Mem. The angelic man leads Yecheskel to a wondrous scene. V'hine kavod Elokei Yisrael ba midarach hakadim. And there, in plain sight, was the kavod of Hashem coming from the east. Yecheskel describes, V'kolo kekol mayim rabim. The voice of God's kavod emanated like the sound of many waters. V'haaretz Heira mikvodo, and the land was illuminated from his kavod. The sight of God's kavod shining, sounding like water rushing? Well, that is a familiar sight. Yecheskel has seen that before. He exclaims, Uchemar'eh hamar'eh asher ra'iti, kamar'eh asher ra'iti bevo'i l'shachet et ha'ir, umar'ot kamar'eh asher ra'iti el nahar kfar. I saw this kind of vision, not once, but twice before. This vision is similar to the vision that I saw back when I went to destroy the city. That was back in Perek Yud. And it's also similar to the visions I saw on the river Kfar. That would be back in the very first Perek of our Sefer. And to the presence of this kavod, Yecheskel reacts, Va'epol al panai, I fell on my face. And yes, this isn't the first time Yecheskel fell on his face. The first time he was overwhelmed with the vision of God, when he saw the Merkava back in Perek Aleph, he also fell on his face. So, back to our Perek, what is the Kavod Hashem doing this time? What Yecheskel sees next and describes is a climactic moment. Uchavod Hashem ba'el habayit derech sha'ar asher panav derech hakadim. The Kavod of Hashem is re-entering the house through a gate facing the east, kadim. The same gate through which it left at the end of that last pre-destruction vision in Perek Yud Aleph. Let's take a moment to recall the words there back in Perek Yud Aleph. Here is Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Vaya'al kvod Hashem me'al toch ha'ir, vaya'amod al ha'har asher mikedem la'ir. The kavod of God went up and it stood at the mountain to the east of the city. So when God's kavod left, vaya'amod al ha'har, it lingered on a mountaintop. And now, fast forward to Perek Mem Gimel, when Hashem's kavod returns, and we also remember a mountain. It's the very high mountain, the Har Gavoa, back in the beginning of this vision, in Perek Mem. The mountain on which the vision began, it is the place that Yecheskel first met up with the Ish, the Mr. Measureman. The similarities between these visions seems to continue. Here is the next thing Yecheskel describes. Batisa'eni Ruach, a spirit lifted me. These words, too, are familiar to us from the beginning of the Sefer. Back in Perek Gimel in Pasuk Yud Bet, Yecheskel was carried by a spirit of God. So coming back to Perek Mem Gimel, the next thing we hear in our Perek, V'tivieni el hachatzir hapnimi. The spirit of God, Yecheskel says, it brought me to the inner courtyard. And there is the moment we have all been waiting for. V'hine malei kvod Hashem habayit. And behold, God's presence filled the house. And Fa'eshma Mitaberi Lai Mehabayit. Yecheskel says, I then heard God's voice speaking to me from the house. The kavod of Hashem, and it is speaking to Yecheskel. V'ish haya omed etzli. Look at how the pasuk characterizes the man now. He is standing next to Yecheskel, but he's not the one talking. Now, all of a sudden, it is God who is doing the talking and the showing around. From here on in, it is no longer Mr. Copperman that is talking to Yecheskel. Now it is Hashem himself. How overwhelming. Yet, familiar on the other hand. Because, of course, this is not the first time that God speaks to Yecheskel. At the end of the first vision, at the end of Perek Aleph, there too, Va'epol al panai va'eshma kol mitaber. Yecheskel fell on his face, and that was immediately followed by the voice of God speaking. You may have caught that the word for speaking, well, it's not medaber as we would expect. It's similar, but not exactly the same. There is a vowel under the first letter mem that changes its meaning. It is actually midaber, a reflexive form of that word, hitpael. As it was midaber, Hashem is speaking to himself, as it were, and Yechezkel is privy to his words, overhearing them. That's how it was in Perek Aleph, when Yechezkel heard the voice of Hashem in connection with the Merkava. But also notice that this time, in our Perek, it's a little different. Yechezkel says, God is mitaber elai. God is still speaking to himself in a sense, yes. But as Yechezkel overhears God's speech, he gets the feeling that he is speaking elai to me. Yechezkel's not just a bystander. He's connected to that voice in a way that he wasn't before. Why? Well, it might have to do with another difference between this time and the last time. This time, God is speaking to Yechezkel, min habayit, from the house. Now, the vision isn't of a mobile bad in the midst of exile, as it was in the first vision of Merkava. No, this time, the vision takes place right in habayit, the place God calls home. In the words of the earlier pasuk in our parak, v'hine malei kvod Hashem habayit, and the kavod of God filled the bayit. These words, the glorious moment that God's presence would come from heaven and occupy a house, this is the first time Yechezkel has witnessed this astounding phenomenon. But even as these words may not be familiar to Yechezkel, they are familiar to us, the readers of Tanakh, because this is not the first bayit into which God's kavod has entered. The reader of Tanakh will remember the first time it happened that Hashem came into a house that mankind built. That would have been in the inauguration of the Mishkan. It was described to us in Perek Mem and Shemot in Parshat Pekudei. Kavod Hashem malei et ha-Mishkan. God's presence filled the Mishkan. There too, God's presence had come from above and into a house mankind had made for the divine. And just before this, God's presence had come from the heavens and alighted on a mountain. In Shmot Perek Chav Dalet, Umar Ek Kavod Hashem Ke'esh Ochelet Barosh Hahar Le'enei Bnei Yisrael. Not only that, but back in Perek Chav Dalet, we have mention of God's feet, so to say, and an implicit mention of God's throne. V'tachat Raglav Kema'aseh Livnat HaSapir U'cha'etzem HaShemayim LaTohar. Under his feet was an image of a fiery brick. Let's come back now to our psukim in Yechezkel Perek Mem Gimel, and we will find that these elements from the first time, they're back. V'yomer Eli ben Adam, et makom kis'i v'et makom kapo raglai, Yechezkel says, God showed me the presence of his throne and the resting place for his feet. So yes, in some sense, this vision Yechezkel had in Perek Mem Gimel, it is a replay. But the key difference between the time when God's kavod filled the Mishkan back in Shmot and this last time in Yechezkel comes at the end of our pasuk in Yechezkel. Asher eshkon sham betoch bnei Yisrael le'olam. God shows Yechezkel his feet, where he will rest among bnei Yisrael. Le'olam, forever. This house is meant to be eternal, forever. Which helps us understand the flow of the next psukim in Yechezkel. In order to facilitate le'olam, forever, God asks, V'lo yitamu od bei Yisrael shem kodshi heima u'machehem biznutam u'figrei machehem bamotam. He asks that the nation should no longer defile his name, they and their kings, with illicit relationships which cause their kings to die. What are these terrible deeds that God is referring to? Let's look at Pasukhe describing these deeds. B'titam sipam el sipi u'mezuzatam etzel mezuzati. They made my threshold their threshold, and my doorpost their doorpost. V'hakir b'ini u'v'neihem, leaving just a thin wall between us, between my house and theirs. V'toavotam asher asu. In other words, the toavot stemmed from the nation or the kings merging their home with God's home. In other words, the toavot stemmed from the nation or the kings merging their home with God's home. You know, the neighbor whose cooking you can smell, whose music rings in your ears, and before you know it, you can't get their songs out of your head. Your home almost becomes their home in some way. Well, that seems to be the kind of scene that God is referring to here. The lack of differentiation between God's home and ours was in some way the root of the problem. This phenomenon, the merger between our house and God's, It really started back in the days of King Shlomo. When he first built the Mikdash, he made his home out of the same materials as he made the Mikdash out of. He created his home, his palace, right near God's home, in the same image as God's home in a way, to the point that when one reads Parak Zayin of Melachim, the inauguration of the Mikdash, it actually becomes difficult to differentiate which is Shlomo's personal home and which is the Mikdash. The reader of those psukim kind of asks themselves, is there even a wall between these two structures? Do they kind of bleed into each other? Here in Yechezkel, God says, that wall, too thin, between the homes of God and the homes of the kings, many of whom later in history were far more corrupt than Shlomo, that is what eventually allowed the Toevot, the abominations, into the Mikdash. The Toevot that Yechezkel was privy to, they were performed right in the confines of the Mikdash. Remember back in Perkhet, the Kir, the wall behind which the Toevot took place? All Yechezkel needed to do was make a hole in that wall, and there were all those Toevot, plain to see, etched basically right on the other side of the wall. Their deeds bled right into the Mikdash. Metaphorically, it was as if the kings put their palace right up to the walls of Hashem's house. Wherever the palace of the king physically was, the point is, the political machinations of the kings weren't separate from the holiness of the worship of Hashem. The two bled into each other. V'achel otam ba'api. God says, this is what caused me to wipe them out with my anger. The lack of a proper cure, the lack of boundaries between God's home and ours, between the holy and the mundane, it started from the days of Shlomo and continued with the later kings. That is what caused things to crumble. How will this be remedied in the future? In the next pasuk, God says, this time, in this new Mikdash, Ata yirachaku et snutam ufigrei machayhem mimani. They need to make sure to distance these behaviors from me. V'shachanti b'tocham la'olam. And then I will be able to reside among them, la'olam, forever. That is the only way we can make this thing, this third bayit, eternal. The next psukim tell us something about what this path will look like. God tells Yechezkel, Haged et b'Yisrael et habayit. Tell the nation about the house, meaning tell them about this third Mikdash, the house whose measurements you were just told about. And the effect of your telling them will lead to something. V'yikalmu me'avonotehem. They will be embarrassed of their sins. Very strange and enigmatic. How would hearing about the third bayit cause them shame? What's the connection here? The way Rashi puts it is this. B'ha'oti lahem chasdi she'eini mo'asam b'avonotam. When they see that God hasn't given up on them and does not despise them, then they will be embarrassed of their deeds. In other words, once the people feel God is disconnected from them, it's only natural for them to feel like God gave up on them, that there's no hope. And that feeling, it can lead you to do things you wouldn't have otherwise done, to keep on sinning. Remember the reason the people kept on sinning back in Parakhet? There, the pasuk explained, Ki omrim ein Hashem ro'e otanu, azav Hashem et ha'aretz. They thought to themselves, God doesn't see us. He has left the land. If you think God has given up on you, then what is the point? Easy to fall into despondency and think your deeds don't really matter. Hearing about the Mikdash from Yechezkel was intended to counter that. Hearing from the prophet that even in these dark times, just in the wake of the Churban, God hasn't given up on them, that God has a plan for a Bayit Shlishi, to redeem them and build a home in which they will dwell with him? Yes, it will bring you to shame. You know you are undeserving. But it can also pull you out of despondency. It can motivate you to do teshuvah, to correct your ways, as you work toward that goal, the goal of a new Mikdash. You'll pardon the analogy to something more mundane, but a weight loss analogy comes to mind. You've been wanting to lose weight for a while. You feel despondent, hopeless. You start, you stop. You know that yo-yo. You give up so many times. But then your daughter gets engaged, and suddenly you have a goal, and embarrassment is part of it. It's a motivating factor. The vision of how embarrassing it would be for you if you didn't lose the weight by the wedding, suddenly you're on your game, motivated like never before. And that motivation to start anew, this is the next thing the psukim describe. Umadidu et tochnit. Suddenly the people measure to prepare for the new Mikdash. Note that earlier it had been the copper man who measured, but now umadidu, it's the people who do it. They have bought in. Seeing that God hasn't given up on them, that will lead them to embarrassment for their sins. But at the same time, that feeling of shame, if combined with the new goal of the Mikdash in front of them, that will elicit change. It will give them the motivation to do teshuva, to turn the measurements of this Mikdash into reality. Sometimes we think God demands action from us, and emotion gets downplayed a bit. But look at the role of emotion here. In this case, embarrassment. That will be the catalyst that will turn things around. It will help garner the energy to rebuild what has been destroyed in that earlier vision that Yechezkel saw back in Prakim Tet and Yod. And back when the city was to be destroyed in Parak Tet, it was also an emotion that saved the people. Remember who it was that survived? The people that would survive, they were the people who felt an emotion. They were the Ne'enachim and Ne'enakim, Al Kol HaToevot Asher Asu B'Tocha, the people who moan and lament the deeds being done in the Mikdash. Yechezkel will put a tav on their foreheads. Just that emotion, the sadness over the abominations performed in the Mikdash, that will save them. Strangely, they don't actually need to take any action to be saved. The emotion, their sense of anguish that this is what their community is guilty of, that is enough to save them. With that, we now transition to one of the final sections of the Perek, which describes the Mizbeach in this third bayit. The Mizbeach described here differs from the way the original Mizbeach in the Mishkan was described in the Torah. Yigal Ariel, in his Sefer in Yechezkel, points out that in the original Mizbeach, the Mizbeach was basically a square. But the Mizbeach in Sefer Yechezkel, which the Mizbeach of Bayit Sheni was modeled after, according to the Mishnah, was created out of three sections. The largest section was the foundation at the bottom, and the next one smaller, and the top one smaller than that. It formed the image of a tower. In fact, in Masechet Sukkah, Chazal compared the Mizbeach precisely to this, a tower. They do so based on the words in Yeshayahu, Vayiven Migdal Betocho. When we think Migdal, tower, our minds jump immediately to a tower that casts its shadow on the early history of mankind. It was Migdal Bavel, the cause of people first becoming dispersed. People became obsessed, na'aseh lanu shem, in the words of the Pasuk, with building a name for themselves. The tower was humanity at its most self-absorbed. Now in Yechezkel, we have a different kind of tower entirely. A Mizbeach, built by those on their way back from Bavel, in the image of the Tower of Bavel. But it repudiates that corrupt Tower of Bavel. This tower is meant to unite the nation that had once been dispersed. Not around our shame, not around our name, but the Shem Hashem, the name of God. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander Center.